residency. You graduated from medical school. At that point, you went from medical school
to practice.
And then you went straight to practice.
Well, not right away. It was a depression, remember? So I had a year of internship.
You did have an internship?
Oh, yeah. I had a year of it. Everybody did.
Uh-huh.
And then most people went into practice.
After 1 year of internship?
After 1 year. But my husband still hadn't, he was out of school by then. By the time I finished my internship, he was out of school 4 years and he still hadn't found a permanent engineering job. He's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And
what type of engineer?
Civil and mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was waiting to see where he would locate, and I did a locum for a physician in Clareton, Pennsylvania, a woman physician who had a practice there. It was her hometown, and she wanted to take a job in pathology in a state hospital, but she wasn't sure she would like it, so she asked me if I would hold down her practice for 3 months until she tried it. And at the end of that time, I could either keep the practice or give it back to her if she decided. Well, she didn't come back, but I didn't want to. It was quite a trip. I had to commute by bus every day.
To Youngstown?
No. To Clareton.
Oh, to Clareton.
To Clareton. Yeah, we hadn't moved to Youngstown yet. So I did that, and then right after that finished, I didn't even consider locating Clareton. It was just, we didn't want to live in Clareton. My husband got a job in Youngstown, and we moved to Youngstown, and that's where I opened my office, and I practiced general practice there till my daughter was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had about 4 or 5 months of training.
And that's when you see close up the practice then?
Yeah, when my daughter was,
born. Is that something you chose to do? Were you under pressure to do that?
Oh, no. I just chose to do that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have that much pressure. I wasn't doing that well to begin with. I mean, I was the first woman physician in Youngstown, and then another one came the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I guess I was a pioneer there.
Did people come to see you? Or did you?
Yeah, but not enough. I mean, I wasn't doing that well.
Uh-huh.
I was doing all right, but...
You think that was because you were a woman?
I think a great deal of it was.
Uh-huh.
So, and for the other one gave up practice in Youngstown by the time we moved back to Pittsburgh. I was like, we had a woman physician for a while. I mean, they just weren't women practicing.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you feel about that? Did you get defeated? Did you get upset?
My generation more or less accepted. We felt so lucky to be able to get this training and be doctors that we sort of accepted second-class status. I mean, women were definitely second-class status as far as patients.
Uh-huh.
We didn't fight against it the way this generation does.
Hmm. Were most of your patients that did come to you women?
All women.
All women.
All were women. And I found I was getting only gynecology. That's why I decided to get some training in it. I was getting medical gynecology. That was everything that I got. Women who didn't want a man to do a pelvic examination.
Uh-huh.
Or who didn't want a man to examine them.
Uh-huh.
So when I came back, I opened up an office in a nice downtown building. And I limited myself to medical gynecology.
You did?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So is that obstetrics also? Or was
no.
That, it's just gynecology.
And then later on, I went back to school and got a degree in public health. In the last 15 years, I did public health.
Oh, mm-hmm. So what year did you do that? When did you go back to school?
When my youngest child was about, in 1960.
Let me back up for a minute, okay, and just get some clarification. Now, your husband's name is what?
Leo Silverblatt.
Leo Silverblatt. Now, you never changed your name. You kept your name, Littleman, as a professional name?
Mm-hmm.
Was that unusual then? It's
no.
Very common now, but it's not...
No, it wasn't unusual. A lot of people did that. Women who practiced, a lot of them. Some did and some didn't, but that wasn't unusual.
It wasn't?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You met your husband while you were in school?
Yeah, when
it?
I was at Pitt. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And how did you meet?
Oh, through a friend, a mutual friend.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, so you met and then got married right afterwards and you started, you set up your practice, and what did your husband
Well, I didn't set up my practice right away. I waited about half a year till we found out we were going to Youngstown, and after we got to Youngstown, we had to get settled. So it was probably a little over a year after my internship was over that I set up my practice in Youngstown.
Okay, what is your husband was an engineer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about your children? How many children do you have, and
I
what
have
are their names?
Children. I have Norma.
And when were they born also?
Norma was born in 1938.
Uh-huh.
And I have, I waited 9 years. And I have Howard.
Uh-huh.
He was born in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Alan. He was born in 1950.
Okay. So, what happened when the second set almost of children were born after 9 years? Did you stop practicing? Were you at home?
I didn't stop practicing, but I cut it down. What I did when my second child was born, I found it too hard to be in practice and have two children. So I had full-time help. I always had good help. I limited my practice to 2 evenings a week.
Oh, that's it?
Mm-hmm. I sublet my office to someone with the stipulation that I could use it 2 evenings a week. Got out of his way when he wasn't using it. And I did that I also had a school job as a school doctor. That was why I couldn't practice too much. I found the school job was just perfect for a mother with children because I could come home at lunchtime. I worked about 2.5 hours in the morning and about 2 hours in the afternoon. I could come home for lunch, feed the baby, give them a bath, and go back. Yeah, so the household help really didn't have to do too much for the child.
What did you teach in school?
I didn't teach. They had school doctors here who did routine physical examinations and checked over children who came back from illness. They had them for years. They still do, but they're to a much less extent.
Now it's usually a school nurse.
Well, they had school nurses then, too, but most days they had doctors.
They had doctors also, or the nurses took over the doctor's role?
When a child couldn't get back in after an illness, they were seen by a doctor. So the smaller schools got a doctor once or twice a week. Larger schools read them 5 times a week.
I see. That's different now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's different.
Actually, their function was very mechanical. It was actually a political job in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You got it by knowing the
principal.
The ward chairman. No, it was done by the thing was under the city. We didn't have a county health department until later. The health department was run by the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that it was during the war, a friend of mine who knew, whose law partner was in politics, said, look, it would be ideal for you to get a school job. You could still take care of your child and so forth. So he said, would you like one? I said, yeah, I think so. So he told me, he said, I think it's all set. Well, the first thing I got was a call from the war chairman. And he called to tell me he was going to allow me to work. And then about two or three months later, he called and asked for a contribution to the Democratic Party. And I said, I don't think I want to contribute. And I called my friend and said, well, what kind of a person did you send me? My friend said, I'm sorry to tell you, but you're expected to contribute to the Democratic Party.
That was a political appointment here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So they didn't really do very much. School doctors did very little. I and the other women who were on it found things to do that were worthwhile, but the men on it, most of the people on it, just used it as a political something for extra income. Hardly ever showed.
Uh-huh.
Didn't do much.
Huh, very different.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But actually, there was no real need for school doctors too much.
Mm-hmm.
There really isn't.
How did things change when the health department, they set up the county
health department? It became a professional department. The school doctors came under the county health department. We transferred from the city to the county.
Did things become more professional? Were things more organized?
In the schools, there was very little difference. But what the county health department did was set up the well baby clinics, mm-hmm. child health conferences, they were called. That was the more modern term. And for a number of years, I didn't like the school job. It was so routine. I'd like you to meet my husband. This is my husband, Leah Silverblatt. This
Hi.
Is Roseanne Ariel.
Hi.
And Aviva.
Aviva
Kadeem.
Aviva.
Correct.
Aviva. She's Israeli.
So you were saying about the county health department. They
yeah.
started these programs.
Yeah, and they were really, they were excellent programs. They were staffed, a lot of them were staffed by pediatricians,
mm-hmm.
but they were staffed by people who were really interested in what they were doing, and I think that it greatly improved the health of babies and young children in this area, because the mothers would bring the babies for their routine shots and formula device and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing a very good job.
Is that similar to the WIC programs now?
No. The WIC is only, it's simply furnishing food and making their health environment better for poor women, so they, pregnant women would not have to deprive themselves of nutrition
mm-hmm.
because of their financial stuff. It was part of the program, but that was a small part.
Uh-huh.
We would run large baby clinics, you know, maybe 15, 20, 25 babies in an afternoon. We brought, it was like a pediatrician's office, except it was all well babies, not sick babies.
Uh-huh.
Later, they took on sick babies, too.
Now, were you involved in any of this?
Well, I was working for it as a physician. I was discussing with the school program because it was meaningless. And I had an opportunity to transfer to the Yowie, to the Well Baby program, and I worked for it in it for a number of years, yeah.
So you switched from going from gynecological activities to Well Baby, more pediatric.
Yeah, right. And I picked up my Well Baby pediatric, you know, just we had a lot of educational seminars and so forth, and
uh-huh.
I was able to do that. It wasn't that hard. And then when I went to graduate school for public health, I majored in maternal and child health.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, what year was that when you switched? When you went to graduate school?
Oh, no. I had gone to that about, I can't remember, around 19.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years before I had switched to the well baby clinic.
Mm-hmm. So that was sort of an accident in terms of how you switched. You weren't interested in the program that you were at the school, and this was something else they were running,
yeah,
and you became
interested in that.
And
I had a chance to switch, yeah, and I switched. And that's how I got into public health, because I was working in public health, you see,
right.
Except that I didn't have formal training in it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was ready, I thought I was ready to go back to work full-time, because this was not a full-time job, it was just a part-time job working in a baby clinic.
I
went to school public health and got a degree in maternal and child health.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to the health department, and after about a year, year and a half, I was director of maternal and child health. And
director of?
Maternal and child health in the health department.
Oh, in the health department?
Yeah.
Now, what type of position is that? That's an administrative position.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
I supervised all of these baby clinics and the school doctors.
What year did you do that?
I did that from about 62. I was assistant director, and the director left, and I became director. I became assistant director in about 62, and I left the health department in 68, so I did that for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
It was fun. I had a lot. It was very interesting. It was a very varied experience. And I got a taste of administrative. And,
uh-huh.
and
what type of people came to the clinic? Because the
60s
was a very volatile area.
Poor people.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We would come into, I would come into a neighborhood to run a clinic, And maybe it had been staffed by some old-time GP who didn't really know anything about infant nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And the babies would all look pasty, and they might not be, they may be fat, but they most of them were anemic.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get much supplementary food. And I would gradually change them over and start them on the right nutrition. And I swear that in 3 or 4 months in an area where you could tell the difference in the way the babies looked, they really looked a lot better.
Most now, was that because of education to the women? Yeah. To the mothers?
Oh, sure. There was a lot of education. It would always be 2 nurses and the doctor running the clinic, and it was all education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason they brought them was to get the shots,
mm-hmm.
and to get the proper formula, but it was all education. It was a very good program, and it's still in operation, actually.
Mm-hmm. What has happened at that point? Were women nursing their babies then, or was there
no,
one?
Very few. I remember one woman, I took over a clinic in, I think, Wilmerding, one of the mill towns here in the east of Pittsburgh, and those women really had no knowledge of infant nutrition. And the woman came in and she had a fat, pasty-looking baby, and I said, "What are you feeding it?" And she said, "Guernsey milk." I said, "Why are you giving this baby Guernsey milk? You know, that's the high-fat milk."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "I called the dairy, and I said, what is your very best milk?" So they told me Guernsey, and that's how she started feeding her baby. And that baby had a very high-fat diet and didn't have any of the supplements that babies need if they're
mm-hmm.
on all-milk diet. That baby looked terrible. That baby, you could really see the improvement in that baby.
Mm-hmm.
Mother was pretty dubious. She hated going off the best milk to her. That was
right.
infant nutrition,
right.
you know.
Right. Huh.
Yeah. It was quite rewarding, you know, because you really were doing a good job.
How did that work in terms of you must have been practicing then, like, before the polio vaccine? You know?
Oh, sure.
And how did that change, and what?
Well,
did you see a lot of polio cases at the time?
I was in preventive medicine, so I didn't see polio cases, but there were polio cases. But when the polio vaccine came in, we participated, and we got the vaccine, and we gave it to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I wasn't in full-time practice. I was in the health department.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, there was polio. Sure.
I didn't know if it made a difference in terms of the type of questions or the type of illnesses or things that people came to. What did things change?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, I guess somehow I think when the polio vaccine came out, I think people started being more, I don't know if they were more educated or more interested in what we, you know, different types of preventative measures.
Oh, no, the babies were coming. The mothers knew that the baby had to get their shots. It was DPT
mm-hmm.
mostly to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and vaccination from smallpox. That's what we started out with. And then, you know, we took a polio vaccine, measles vaccine, and so forth. As these things came out, we added them to
uh-huh.
what babies got.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, polio wasn't the beginning of shots by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Babies were getting shots long before that.
Mm-hmm. How did they do it? You said the county health department became organized. Is that when most of the people at the clinics all started? What did people do before that?
Well, no, there were clinics. But they were not, they were run in the old-fashioned way. A doctor would run in and he'd very quickly see a few babies and give them shots. But there was a minimum of education done because the doctor didn't take enough time because actually he didn't know about
mm-hmm.
modern preventive pediatric care.
Mm-hmm.
When the county health department came in, it was run like a modern preventive health clinic. It was run like a preventive health department in this, baby clinics are... child health conference.
What year did you start?
That I'm trying to remember. I think 57 sort of rings a bell in my mind.
Hmm,
I think,
quite late.
Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh was one of the last to get a professional health department. As I say,
mm-hmm.
it was a health department, but
mm-hmm.
it was a political thing.
Mm-hmm.
I told you, the ward chairman had to approve you
mm-hmm.
before you could get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And once the county health department came in, they began a great deal of new stuff. In addition to offering what the others did, they offered much more. The physicians had a lot of in-service training. We had Dr. Spock in Pittsburgh at that time. Mm-hmm. He was at the university. And at the time I started working in baby clinics, I loved it because once a week we had a chance to have seminars with Dr. Spock and
mm-hmm.
with other people from the university, preventive psychiatry, and there were all kinds of good opportunities for the doctors to learn mm-hmm. modern preventive pediatrics.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Bible of many women in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are there any unusual anecdotes that you can think of in terms of when you were director of the unit?
I did for a long time. It's now 21 years since I left the health department.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. There probably were a lot, but
mm-hmm.
nothing comes to mind.
Now, you left, you said, in 68? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when you retired?
No.
Or what?
No. There was an administrative change, and I didn't really like my new assignment.
Uh-huh.
And I had always had a contact with Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
I had worked for them once a week at an evening clinic for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for someone for medical, a coordinator,
mm-hmm.
full-time job.
For Planned Parenthood here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to get that job, and I was very happy to get it because I really loved it. And liked it better than the health department job.
Mm-hmm. What did you do there? You were a medical coordinator?
I was medical coordinator because they had a medical director, and I didn't want to take her title away. They wanted to make me medical director, and I didn't want to. She was still working and doing a good job, and I said, just give me another title.
So what were your responsibilities there?
I had to run the whole medical program, Planned Parenthood, which consisted of giving women gynecologic examinations, birth control advice,
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of community education programs.
Mm-hmm.
Opening clinics. I came in just about the time Homewood became a hotbed of black protest.
Mm-hmm.
They threatened to burn down our Homewood Planned Parenthood clinic, and we had to shut it down for a while.
Why was that?
Oh,
why
well,
was the protest
this was
there?
When Martin, in 68, Martin Luther King was killed, and the hill was on fire. And
is that because it was staffed by white people, or
no,
why?
No, there were hotheads in the black community that spread the word that Planned Parenthood was genocidal. They're giving you birth control so that they can control the black population and cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want black women to have babies. And there was a lot of distrust and hatred. And I still remember what misgivings we reopened. And we went to a new spot and we opened a clinic on Homewood Avenue. And we had to employ a security guard in the front because we were really afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of distrust fomented by black activists who were
mm-hmm.
saying the genocide. Of course, it wasn't true at all.
Right.
But there were people who were fearful. Oh, those were very exciting times.
Huh.
And my job at Planned Parenthood was just, you know, I was involved with everything medical that went on there.
Uh-huh. Were you there in 73?
Uh-huh.
And that was when abortion became legal.
I was a group of us had formed an organization around 1969 called Abortion Justice Association. And we had worked to make abortions legal.
Mm-hmm.
And 73, when the Supreme Court decision came down, we felt our work was done. We weren't even going to talk to the anti-abortionists because we had won, and the hell with them. But now we have to
start all over again.
Yeah, right.
Were the anti-abortionists very strong before 73? Were you involved in that?
Oh, yeah. We used to. Oh, yeah. I did a lot of speaking at meetings where they'd get an anti-abortionist and they'd get someone from the the abortion justice group, and it would be like a debate. It would get pretty hot. Yeah.
What was the political climate like in the area that you worked in, also here in Pittsburgh, in terms of pro-abortion, against abortion?
Well, we're, of course, everybody around Planned Parenthood was pro-abortion,
right,
naturally. Oh, and while I was there, we set up the first early abortion clinic at Planned Parenthood. That is, they do very early abortions from like a week after the first missed period to about 3 weeks.
So you were medical director when that was set up?
Yeah.
Or coordinator, rather?
Yeah. Well, we had to get federal money, and they said I had to take the title medical director since I was in charge, and, and the medical director did not have the qualifications. So I became medical director. I had talked with her, and she was very gracious. She continued the work. She became emeritus, and I became medical director. But that was only because we were forced to.
Were there a lot of protests at the time?
They
have anti-abortionists at the clinic.
Oh yeah,
the same kind of thing, you know.
Not quite as bad as these people. Operation Rescue, nothing quite that bad. Just marching and placards and many times they marched at that
clinic. They did.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
they're a peculiar breed. They're zealots, you know, and they're very determined. They're so sure they're saving lives. We had a lot of
experience. How did you deal with them in terms of or did you just ignore them or try and ignore them?
What do you mean? They're out marching on the, I think some of our people went out and marched with, made quick placards
and went
counteracting what their placards said. As volunteers and, but the organization didn't have to deal with them. They didn't come in and tear down the clinic the way they do now. They weren't that aggressive.
So 73, abortion became legal, and the protests, I guess, must have stopped to some degree.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, they died down. They really sent them, as they say, sent them reeling. They had a very bad defeat. And they didn't stop entirely at any time. There was a woman named Mary Winter, who was a leader of she was a very effective leader. I forget the name. They still have an organization, Americans for the Unborn Child or something like that. And they stayed right with the fight. They didn't give up. This particular group didn't give up.
How did it affect Planned Parenthood? Did Planned Parenthood change in terms of some of what its goals are? Did it focus more in on having abortions, or was it still more preventive in terms of birth control?
Well, it did both. There was SCAFE money that helped Planned Parenthood a lot over the years, and at the time abortion became legal, SCAFE money funded Women's Health Service downtown, set it up, and to do abortions. And Planned Parenthood did not want to have an abortion clinic, but they felt there was a need for an early, women that just missed a period. So we didn't open it right away, but about a year after it became legal, we were able to open the early abortion clinic.
Now, was that just at your clinic, or was that at all the different Planned Parenthood clinics?
No, you have to do that. You mean just in Pittsburgh, or?
Planned Parenthood has more than one clinic, isn't that
Yeah,
right?
But the branches, we only had it at the main downtown office, because we had to employ fully qualified and boarded obstetricians. We tried to have the very highest standards for everything in case of emergencies. You know, there's a lot that goes into a clinic like that. The operation is very, very simple. But we wanted to do everything right, so we had to do a lot of preparation and planning, and we had to buy all kinds of equipment on standby, just in case somebody began hemorrhaging or passed out or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of fun to, you know, to set it up. We also did infertility work there, too.
I did.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And
is that still prominent? I never put the two together in my head.
I think they're still doing it. I'm not in close touch with them now. I think they're still doing it, sure.
They do the whole range.
Yeah, but we always employed someone who was an expert in infertility.
Uh-huh. Now, how long were you at Planned Parenthood?
From 68 until I retired in 76.
And what made you decide to retire at that point?
Well, I became 65 years old, and they had a policy that everybody retired at 65.
So that was
I didn't think I'd stay retired, but I liked it. So I stayed retired.
What time is that?
It's time for me, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, I have a lunch date at 12:45.
So oh, sure.
Yeah.
You're really fascinating.